And I'll actually let I'll let Mr. Nierman make the so you're going to make this motion when I entertain motions.
Good, thank you.
All right, I'm going to call to order the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Effectiveness. Good afternoon. And as first order of business, I'm going to carry over House Bill 2174 to the agenda for next Tuesday. And with that, I'm going to open a work session on the introduction of committee measures, and I will entertain a motion on committee measures.
Madam Chair, I move to introduce the following legislative concepts as committee measures. Legislative Concept 1618, dated 12/5/2014, and Legislative Concept 3306, dated 2/17/2015.
Thank you. Representative Nierman has moved to introduce the following concepts as committee measures: LC 1618, dated 12/5/14, and LC 3306, dated 2/17/15. Right. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? Seeing none, the motion passes. And with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2438. And the proponents can come forward, and Wendy will give us a summary of the bill.
Madam Chair and members, House Bill 2438 transfers the Office of Administrative Hearings from the Employment Department to the Department of Administrative Services. The bill declares an emergency and is effective upon passage. The bill has been found to have no revenue impact. It may have a fiscal impact, but a statement has not yet been issued. There's a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means.
Okay, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Fagan and members of the committee, I'm Lisa Neisenfeld. I'm the director of the Oregon Employment Department. This is a bill that has arisen simply out of citizen feedback. We at the Employment Department host the Office of Administrative Hearings. About 66% of their hearings are related to unemployment insurance, although those may not be their lengthiest hearings. Others go throughout the state government, and Gary will describe those a bit. We get a fair amount of pushback from citizens when they have their unemployment claims heard by an agency that is housed technically within our department. We do have rather an arm's-length relationship, but it is a perception of the public that there is a conflict of interest and that we cannot be impartial, or they cannot be impartial. So therefore, we looked for a home in state government simply in the interest of better government. And we don't perceive cost to this. There will be no physical move. There will be a small cost of separating our IT systems. But, and as Representative Nierman pointed out earlier today, we'll have to change a few signs. But I'm going to turn it over to our Chief Administrative Law Judge, Gary Tyler, to talk about that.
Thank you. My name is Gary Tyler. I'm the Chief Administrative Law Judge with the Office of Administrative Hearings, Madam Chair and members of the committee. This bill does improve the perception of independence of the Office of Administrative Hearings and the fairness that the citizens would receive from the Office of Administrative Hearings. Historically, back in 2000, the Office of Administrative Hearings was created with that goal. There was concern among the citizens that they weren't getting a fair playing field with hearings, that the agencies had to influence on the administrative law judges, and so the central panel was created at that time to separate out the hearings process from the agencies and from the influence of the agencies on the administrative law judges. That has been an ongoing challenge since then. In terms of perception, right now we do about 20,000 hearings a year for the Employment Department. And so we were looking to find an agency that could provide the same administrative support that we received from the Employment Department, but where there wouldn't be as much of a chance for that perception of unfairness and that connection with a large agency for whom we do work. DAS fit that bill. We do 9 hearings a year for DAS, and DAS is in the business of providing administrative support. So what we are doing with this bill is simply shifting the administrative support that the Office of Administrative Hearings receives from the Employment Department over to DAS. There is no physical move involved with our offices within the Office of Administrative Hearings or any of the personnel involved. There is no budget impact. We charge a fee for service each month, so we don't have a budget source other than the payments that we receive from the agencies for whom we provide service. So what we will be receiving is just that ongoing administrative support, but instead of it being provided by the OED, it'll be provided by DAS. I could answer questions, but basically that's the purpose of this bill, and we're trying to free up some of our time too, because with 20,000 hearings a year for the Employment Department, we get phone calls every day from people who are confused about the separation between the Office of Administrative Hearings and the Employment Department. So it would be good to make that separation very clear to the citizens if we can.
Thank you very much. And I remember when you lobbied me about this, because I'm an attorney and I've represented, you know, folks in unemployment hearings, and I've had to explain to more than one client, you know, why are we having a hearing before the same people that denied me unemployment? It's like, well, it's actually different, but it is just a confusion for, you know, for the people that are involved. So appreciate the proactive effort to create less confusion for Oregonians. Any questions for this panel?
A comment, perhaps?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I've been on the Office of Administrative Hearings Oversight Committee for several years. And it has been discussed that Oversight Committee, is one of its duties is to make recommendations to the legislature, and I expect they will be making a recommendation on this in support. We just have had trouble getting quorums together and getting all the people, because it takes in private sector people and all sorts of, and we just haven't got to that point. But we have discussed it at length in that Oversight Committee, and did some outreach with the unions that are involved in representing the workers and the judges as well, and everybody has been supportive of this move to this point. So I just wanted to put that on record.
Thank you, Representative.
And I could probably get the copies of letters from those unions supporting this.
Great. Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Stephen Demarest, speaking of a union for SEIU 503, come on up.
Thank you. Hopefully he doesn't counteract what I just said. Chair Fagan, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Demarest. I am an administrative law judge with the Office of Administrative Hearings, and I have been since the inception of the OAH. My employment with the Employment Department predates the OAH. My entire career with the state, over 34 years, has been with that agency. And I'm here today to testify in support of HB 2438. The customers of the OAH are agencies, boards, and commissions for which we hold hearings and that are billed for our work. But we also serve the citizens of Oregon who appeal an administrative action. We serve our customers and citizens by providing fair and impartial hearings where individuals have an opportunity to fully present the facts of their case and to tell their story. The position of an administrative law judge with the OAH attracts and retains individuals who believe in and are committed to due process, impartiality, and good government. My coworkers and I strongly favor an independent OAH, and we know that good government includes the perception of an independent OAH that provides fair and impartial hearings. It is standard for the OAH's administrative law judges to include in an opening statement for a hearing that the ALJ is not employed by the agency for which the hearing is being conducted, except that we cannot say that for Employment Department hearings, which a majority of our hearings are. If the question arises, we must acknowledge we are employed by the agency that issued the decision under appeal. The fact is, even though the current administration of the Employment Department does not attempt to interfere with the operations of the OAH, our relationship with our largest customer is different than our relationship with any other customer because we are part of the agency. The Department of Administrative Services is an infrequent customer. A move to DAS will enhance the important perception of independence by making the OAH separate from all of its major and regular customers. I'm also a member of SEIU Local 503, which represents all but a handful of the classified workers of the OAH. I'm on the SEIU Board of Directors, and I am the OAH Section Officer for the Employment Department sublocal of SEIU 503. SEIU 503 and the administrative law judges it represents support the move of the OAH to DAS. SEIU believes in and fights for quality public services. The proposed transfer to DAS is consistent with that goal. Yesterday, Governor Brown spoke of her commitment to promoting transparency and trust in government and to working to build confidence by the public. SEIU 503 and the OAH employees it represents share that commitment with the governor and with you and the other members of the legislature. We hope that the transfer to DAS will be thoughtfully constructed to ensure the independence that is necessary for good government and for good service to Oregon citizens. And we look forward to working with DAS and OAH throughout this transfer should the bill pass. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions or comments from Mr. Demarest? Looks like you're off the hook.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who'd like to be heard on House Bill 2438? Okay, with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2438 and open.
Representative Wilson is on his way.
He's on his way, okay. I guess in the meantime, we can do the work session on 2884. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2884. The bill has been referred to our committee, but needs to be re-referred to the Committee on Revenue. So I'll entertain a motion to re-refer House Bill 2884.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2884 without recommendation for passage to be referred to the Speaker's desk to be referred to the Committee on Revenue.
Thank you. Representative Rayfield has made a motion to have House Bill 2884 move without recommendation for passage to the Speaker's desk so that it can be referred to the Committee on Revenue. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? Okay, seeing none, the motion passes. And I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2884. And we will, I guess we can open it and then have you read the summary, and if he's not here by then, we can stand at ease. So I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2856, and we're waiting for Representative Wisnett, but in the meantime, Wendy will give us a summary of the bill.
Madam Chair and members, House Bill 2856 directs an agency that wishes to retain a vacant position to report the reasons for retaining the position to the Department of Administrative Services director, requires the director of DAS to prohibit the agency from filling the position if the director determines that the reasons are insufficient, requires the director of DAS to report quarterly to the Legislative Assembly on actions taken regarding vacant positions, excludes from this vacancy reporting requirement the Legislative Assembly, courts, Public Defense Services Commission, Secretary of State, and State Treasurer. The bill has been found to have no revenue impact. It may have a fiscal impact, but the statement has not yet been issued. There's no subsequent referral and no amendments at this time.
All right, we'll stand at ease for a moment. Wait for Representative Wisnett. Representative, you've already had a summary of the bill, so go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, honorable colleagues, committee members, for the record, I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53. Thank you for hearing House Bill 5856. When I was called yesterday, I was very surprised and glad to do this. House Bill 2856 eliminates six-month-old agency vacancies, which are not justified for retention. Representative Hovey and others maybe on this committee, I think it'd only be Paul and myself. Remember, this is the same bill that was passed out of general government and Consumer Protection Committee unanimously in 2010. The committee was co-chaired by Representative Hovey and Representative Wisnant. We passed the bill out, and it went to Ways and Means. LFO Director Ken Rocco, if you haven't, he's sort of a fixture in this building and legislative fiscal office and works with the co-chairs on the budget. He worked with me to create a process to actually remove the funding from an agency and return the funding to the general fund account. The handout you have was the only time in my political career I got front page Oregonian top fold. Except I think it was March 11th, 2011, when Michelle Cole and the Oregonian reported on our bill and the fact that there was identified 4,475 jobs that had been paid for in the Ways and Means process, but were vacant. There was much public interest and support for this bill. There was some concern by the public that maybe the money for these vacant positions was being used as slush funds. Because when you get the budget, you're funded for the position and all the other costs, but the majority, of course, of the agency budget is personnel cost. So they were saying we need this many people to do this service, but they were leaving all these positions vacant. The 2011 data reported over $225 million of state positions had been vacant for 6 months or longer. $225 million. The 2010 bill was referred to Ways and Means. What that means is a lot of those bills is called death to the Ways and Means, and it died in Ways and Means. I had conversations during, I was actually on the Ways and Means Committee, the full Ways and Means Committee that year, and I talked to co-chair Richardson, who was the Republican member from the House. And he told me that the co-chairs were looking at vacant positions now because of this introduction of the bill in each agency review. But they thought that they could handle it. And actually, that year on Ways and Means, there were reports by each agency as we went through and approved their budgets of how many vacant positions were eliminated. It was significant savings for the state of Oregon, for the co-chairs in balancing the budget. After I was happily notified that you would be hearing this bill today, Madam Chair, I've met with LFO staff, and they agree that there's a possibility for more attention to this vacant position review, and there may be need for legislative action to continue to monitor vacant positions. So, Madam Chair, I would like to work with them and see if they have recommendations to help the bill be better, help them do their job, and to have any amendments to the bill. I believe the bill is a good example of the type of legislative action Governor Brown talked about yesterday and when she was sworn in to help restore confidence of the Oregon people in Oregon government. Thus, I hope the chair and the committee will bring this bill back for further hearings after I work with LFO and then pass the bill to the floor for a vote. Any questions for you or the committee?
Well, first of all, I'm sad that you would be surprised I would give your bill a hearing. You and I are pals. Of course I'll give your bill a hearing. Any questions or comments for this very interesting concept? Representative Nierman.
Thanks. Thank you, Chair Fagan, and thanks for your testimony, Representative Whitsitt. And I think I'm generally supportive of this. I'm trying to think of any kind of unintended consequences. Like, for instance, it's getting to be 5 months, I let the position go for 5 months because I want to fund my slush fund or whatever, to use your term. And then at the end, I have to scramble to fill the position because I don't want it to go away, and I find a lesser qualified person. I mean, I could probably think of other things like that. Have you thought about those things?
Madam Chair and Representative Nierman, we had that same discussion from LFO, and Mr. Rocco told me, says, Representative, there'll be people that'll still be able to get around what you're trying to do here. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't try and we shouldn't hold agencies responsible as much as we can. Remember now, my bill says that you lose the position after 6 months if not justified. Because there's many situations where a position is temporary are seasonal and things like that. I just went through the subcommittee on public safety, and the military department had 70 vacant positions, but they've come and talked to me about all 70 of those positions. They did say you're the first representative that's ever asked me to come in and explain these vacant positions. So again, the bill, I think working with LFO, we had a meeting, Darren Hill, before I came down, and he couldn't be here to comment, but he did assured me, and I assure you, Madam Chair, that they want to work. They think there could be merit to still looking at the bill to see if we can help them hold the agency's feet to the fire, that they're not abusing the system. I hope they're not, and I don't think it's a widespread. But when you got that, you know, $200 some million this year, they've changed the report, and this year the report that I just received yesterday, there's still 2,643 vacant positions that have been vacant for 6 months or longer. You know, if you figure that, $100,000 counting benefits and salary per position, that's $26 million. So.
Wow.
I think I have my zeros. It may be more. Okay.
Representative Holby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And though I do remember this bill quite well from previous sessions, I must say there's some other aspects of this that I think need to be explored to some degree. I guess I take a little bit of issue. In fact, when we got through this, we found out that actually these agencies don't have slush funds. This money is actually in the general fund and is up to the legislature to appropriate. So those positions remain vacant until such time as the legislature sees that there's a need to appropriate the money for it. Sometimes there's not. We can't always be totally accurate on what the caseload may be for DHS or what some of the other needs of the agencies will be. And so that money has not been dispersed yet to appropriate those positions because the need hasn't been established. So the legislature actually does have control of those appropriations and those dollars that are budgeted for vacant positions. And so, you know, not all agencies are running slush funds with all these vacant dollars in them. Those dollars actually are in the general fund, and so it does kind of come up that potentially if you carry this out, that there could be unintended consequences by removing those vacant positions after 6 months, and then we are expecting an uptick in caseload in unemployment or an uptick in caseload in DHS cases, and the legislature has now taken those appropriations or those vacant positions away so that they wouldn't be able to fill them. And so, I mean, I think that was kind of the rest of the conversation, the idea that the agencies really have slush funds, that they can do what they want to. It was not altogether my understanding of how the money transferred from the general fund to the agency for the positions. So it was, you know, a process that LFO currently does go through to appropriate money for those positions and actually does have control over during the interim cycle between budgets. So, I mean, that was not saying that there isn't some merit in looking at this to make sure that, you know, these positions are appropriately budgeted for to start with. But we sort of came to the conclusion that's what our Ways and Means process is supposed to do. So with that, I just wanted to.
I'm not sure, Madam Chair, that was a question, but I'd like to respond.
Okay.
As Representative Hovey said, and I don't think I said there is. I said there's a perception that these money is used as slush funds, and there is that perspective that it's my understanding And I would ask the chair to be sure that, you know, if you will bring the bill back, that we have someone from LFO and BAM here to talk about that, that they're experts that we pay a lot of money to do. After Ken Rocco worked with me on the first draft in our committee that Representative Hovey and I co-chaired, he did come up with a procedure of how it could be done. It's my understanding that each agency receives quarterly checks, and after one of their checks, if it's been 6 months, that that money could be taken from that agency and used somewhere else where it would be better used. Because it's my understanding, Representative Hovey and Madam Chair, that that money was given to those agencies, even though the position was vacant. So again, I think, you know, it was LFO worked with me. It's intended to help LFO, and the co-chairs do their job. They have to make the final responsibility, but it's also someone needs to question, and that's what we're all talking about now, question the bureaucracy and agencies in Oregon to be sure that these vacancies aren't justified to be left open for 6 months or longer. Otherwise, that money could be used for teachers, schoolrooms, and other state needs, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Rayfield.
You know, I just had a question. If you guys had considered the fact that actually, you know, having a requirement like this might incentivize agencies to fully staff up the capacity and might actually increase the cost that we're spending, as opposed to what Representative Hovey was saying, that we're right now we're only paying for the positions that are actually, you know, occupied. It's more of a perception issue. But when we put in a requirement like this that we're going to eliminate it, that if I was an agency director, I might choose, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I might choose to fully staff all of those positions, costing the state more money.
Madam Chair, Representative Rayfield. The Ways and Means Chairs, subcommittees look at the budget submissions, and they look, everything you're looking at is based upon, to provide that service, how many FTEs. And as I said, I don't have the exact number, probably over 80% of their budget is personnel cost. It's, you know, it's not, there's not very little actually operational cost for telephones, whatever, that we pay DAS. But it's for personnel cost. So they're saying to provide that service, I need this many people. But they're providing the service without the people. So I take your you know, your concern. It's Ways and Means process. We're saying we want you to fill those positions. That's what your budget's based upon. You have a mission to perform for the state, the citizens of Oregon, and you need this many people to do it, and we approve that. But the point here is, If you can provide that service without these positions, then you didn't need the money for it.
Just to follow up, and this may be, I may be misunderstanding Representative Holby's explanation, but my understanding is, and because I am on several Ways and Means Committee, I think the understanding is that, yes, we do approve the full FTEs, but those aren't necessarily paid for if they're not filled.
Madam Chair, I'm not an expert. I think they are. I think the money is paid for those positions. Okay. But we can clarify that. I'm not sure.
Thank you very much. Good questions. Yes, Representative Holby.
Not to belabor this, but I think Representative Wisness, you know, if we hear this further, we should have, you know, Mr. Rocco or somebody from Ways and Means or LFO come in and explain that process to us a little more fully, you know, because I think Representative Wisnett does, you know, though I stand by what I said, some of what he said, it may also be true where the agencies actually do receive money. But the fact is that they receive that money to spend on a specific purpose. And if they do not spend that money, that money does revert back to the general fund where the legislature has control of it. Yeah. So at the end of the cycle, that is the process that's supposed to happen, and they have to be accountable to Ways and Means and how they spend that money that was appropriated. So if they ended up shifting that money and spending it for something else that it wasn't appropriated for, I believe the Ways and Means process and the legislature has the ability to hold that agency accountable. But, you know, rather than have that, you know, Representative Wisnett and I have had this conversation many times before, but perhaps, you know, if you want to entertain this bill further, you have, you know, somebody from LFO come up and explain that.
And Madam Chair, and to my friend Representative Hovey, I think at the end I convinced him, and Rocco did convince him enough that I think he signed on, but I didn't get that data yet.
No problem. this has been great to be, just to have this issue discussed and happy to have a hearing. Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Anyone else want to be heard on House Bill 2856? I saw Representative Johnson come in. I'm assuming he was on the next one. Okay. Well, with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2856 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2843. And Wendy, will you read us a summary?
Madam Chair and members, House Bill 2843 authorizes the Department of Consumer and Business Services to enter into interagency agreements with the Construction Contractors Board for the board to perform duties on behalf of the department related to the State Building Code. The bill authorizes the Construction Contractors Board to enter into interagency agreements with the Department of Consumer and Business Services for the department to perform duties on behalf of the board. The bill declares an emergency, is effective upon passage. It's been found to have no revenue impact. It may have a fiscal impact, but a statement has not yet been issued, and there's no subsequent referral.
All right. Representative Johnson and Barbara Smith, Representative Smith Warner. And do you guys want to come up, just the two of you first? Do you want to bring any of your...
We're playing hooky from revenue. So.
Okay. So have lots and lots of questions, yeah. I think is what they're saying.
Please.
So take as long as you want.
Okay. Well, go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed in whichever order.
Together all the time.
We bonded really well.
That's right. Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Barbara Smith Warner, and I represent House District 45, which is Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose. Okay. You might want to introduce yourself as well, perhaps.
I'll save my powder.
All right. We are here before you today for one of those, another one of those great bills that increase efficiency and coordination and decrease duplication. And this time it is House Bill 2843. This bill, I will give you a fairly short overview of it and turn it over to my colleague and some other folks who you have here to speak about it. So basically what this would do is right now the Oregon Construction Contractors Board and the Building Codes Division both provide licensing and enforcement to the construction industry. They serve the same construction community through different agencies, and they have some different licensing and enforcement systems. So the idea of trying to increase efficiency and reduce duplication, this will create new partnership opportunities and eliminate statutory barriers. The hope is that by partnering together, contractors, businesses, and Oregon citizens would benefit from a streamlined, more efficient approach to providing construction licensing services. Both organizations would retain their separate and distinct agency status, but they would work closely together through these new tools that would be provided through this bill. Specifically, it would encourage agency cooperation by allowing these agencies to share resources, electronic systems, and the ability to serve customers seeking licenses of both agencies through a one-stop shopping. Right now, the CCB does overall contractors licenses, and then the BCD does some more specific licenses. So this would enable them to coordinate so that some specialty contractors wouldn't have to go to two different places to get their licenses. It will remove the statutory barriers that right now keep CCB, Construction Contractors Board, and the Building Codes Division from collecting fees on each other's behalf. So that way you can kind of remove those barriers that will enable this to happen. And it will also allow a streamlined partnership concept for both agencies to work together and share information to provide that basic licensing and enforcement services. Understanding other things, this bill does not reorganize either agency or allow the director of either agency to make final regulatory decisions on behalf of the other agency or the industry board. So with that, I'm happy to entertain questions at any time, but I will turn it over to my colleague.
Thank you, Representative.
On my left.
Chair Fagan, members of the committee, I'm Mark Johnson. I'm the state representative for House District 52. Great to be here. Thanks for having us. My colleague has teed this up very well, and my perspective in this is as someone who actually operates in this arena, as somebody who's a general contractor who has to deal with licensing and certification and so forth. And this is a wonderful piece of governance. It's just a great place for to see agencies saying, how can we work together to make the lives of our customers better? How can we streamline the process to make that permitting process more efficient, take less time? Because, frankly, time's money. In my business, all we have to sell is our time. Mm-hmm. And if we're not working, we're not making money. So if we can, if there are things that the government could actually do to help enable us to hold on to more of our own time so that we can accomplish things for other folks, that's a good thing. So it's a great program. Hats off to Mark Long, who's done a great job, I think, of constantly looking for ways to make the process more efficient and more cost-effective. I haven't yet met the new director for CCB, but I understand he's going to be a tremendous asset as well. So I think this is a great partnership. I think you all have a handout in front of you, I believe, that talks about the bill, but I would just point out that it's pretty remarkable to see all of these different organizations lined up and on the same page. You've got Open Shop, Closed Shop, virtually every large construction firm to small firms represented here saying this is a good thing. So when that happens, I think you can be rest assured that even if you don't understand the construction business or dwell in that arena, that this is a pretty good stakeholder consensus piece of legislation. And it's an honor to be a part of it. And I wish we could do this more frequently. So happy to answer any questions or just get out of the way and let some of these folks behind us talk.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments for this panel? Yes, get them out of revenue a little bit longer. Representative Stark.
Thank you, Chair Fagan. I'm just trying to keep you guys around and save you from other work. Can you give some examples of other state agencies that are already doing this, or are there agencies that are doing this on a regular basis?
Not like stump the representative.
That's a great question.
Coordinating it.
I think you need to stay until you can answer that question.
Let me Google that, Representative Stark.
I can tell you.
Nothing comes to mind. I mean, there could be regarding some licensure things, but it doesn't in other areas. But I'm not aware of it. So it's odd that what Chair Fagan and Representative Stark. I think it's a little characteristic to have a group, an agency, or a department perhaps give up some of its autonomy. They all like to kind of hold on to their relevance and their meaning and protect themselves, but I think you've got people here that recognize that they're better if they're stronger together, operating more efficiently together. So hats off to these folks.
Thank you. Other questions or comments? Representative Holby.
Can't hardly keep my mouth shut on this. There are other agencies that do have interagency agreements and that do coordinate activities together that I'm aware of. Department of Employment, Department of Revenue, the CCB, also Department of Justice. There are some other multi-agency coordinated programmatic. Sure. Type of functions that do exist, and it is a great model, I think, for efficiency, you know, to look at funding programs that have multiple agencies in them instead of programming that function separately in each agency. It does,
good point,
I think.
Chair Fagan, Rep. Polvi, thank you for that lifeline.
Phone a friend.
That's right.
I'll fall short of naming those.
Other questions or comments? Okay, great. Well, I actually didn't see anybody else signed up, but do you guys want to testify on this bill? Okay. Okay, no problem. Come on.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The heads of the, so they're on here.
So glad they're coming out.
Good afternoon, Chair Fagan, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark Long, Administrator of State Building Codes. Just concisely, I think both representatives did a great job of explaining what the bill is, so I won't kind of go back through that. Both Jim and I Jim with the Construction Contractors Board. He'll introduce himself. Are committed to serving our customers, and in this case, both our organizations serve the same customers, and we want to make sure that we operate as efficiently, meet their needs, because, as Representative Johnson said, time is money, and it is for us if we can be more efficient, but also for our customers, and that's really what this is about. So we appreciate you working with us on this.
Good afternoon, Chair Fagan, members of the committee. I'm Jim Denno, the administrator of the Construction Contractors Board. Since I got there in August, one of my main messages to staff has been streamline, find more efficient ways of doing our business, and serve the customer better. And I think this bill is just a unique and exciting opportunity for us to do that, to partner with building codes. Mark and I both feel it's high time that these two agencies work more closely together. And I think the issues have been pretty well covered, but this is just an exciting opportunity that we're happy to be a part of.
Great. Questions or comments for this panel? Representative Holby.
Thank you, and I appreciate the question and some indulgence here. I really like this bill. You know, having said that, I was hoping to see a little more, specificity in a couple of areas, and one of them being, I understand the licensing, streamlining, and that very important stuff to serve your contractors. But at some point, it looks like this bill does give the ability, but I would really like to see the building officials require upon, signing off on an inspection, whatever phase of inspection that is, that they require to have listed the license number of the contractors that perform the work. We have a huge problem of unlicensed contractors in this state, as I think both of you will probably admit. And there's always been a disconnect to the inspector that's approving the work that's been done without really knowing whether or not that person that did that work was actually licensed and authorized under law to be able to perform that work. And it seems like a simple check balance that the inspector require that they list the license numbers of the contractors that perform the work. You know, obviously, if a homeowner is allowed, or in many cases, an owner is allowed to do their own work, but that I'm sure that could be designated as well. And it would certainly, I think, go a long ways to help some enforcement issues around dealing with unlicensed contractors. And I would really like to see that be a part of this bill, because I think it would be an easy thing to accomplish.
Statement or question? I mean, I'm happy to respond. Mark Long for the record, Chair Fagan, Representative Holby. Just for the committee's benefit, on the upfront side, many of you may be aware we've worked on what we call e-permitting at the state to work with our local government partners on electronic transaction of the permits, and part of that we're able to partner with CCB and then our licensing side to make sure that we're selling the permits up front to the appropriate licensed individuals. On the back end, local government, of course, has the authority on an individual basis to take those, get that information, but it has not been addressed on a statewide level. We brought this bill to you, really not changing any current law, just giving Jim and I, Mr. Denno, the ability to kind of work together. So I'm happy to kind of follow up on that. But we kind of kept things kind of at status quo from an authority standpoint, just allowing us to work closer together. So I hope that's kind of where we're at.
Paula?
I appreciate that. I don't think I would be asking for the Construction Contractors Board or the building officials to give up any authority. I'm just asking for an additional requirement that would be able to document that whoever's performing this work is actually licensed to do so. And if they're not, it seems like that coordination between the agencies should be able to address that violation of law.
Sure.
And it seems like we're missing a piece of easy enforcement that, from my perspective anyway, that would solve some really big problems. We have a lot of legitimate licensed contractors who are out there doing things correctly, paying their fees, playing by the rules, running payrolls, and it's very difficult for them to compete with contractors who are flying under the radar, unlicensed, no payrolls, and this would be a very easy tool with this type of an agreement to implement, and it would just take a building code, I guess, or process rule that says, you know, we're not going to sign off on this inspection unless you fill out the contractor and license number of the person that, or company that did the work. And I just think that's a real easy thing to accomplish. Maybe in my simplistic mind it seems easy, but, it really would address a big problem.
Sure. Chair Fagan again, Representative Holby. I hope by my statement that I didn't mean to dismiss that there's an actual problem. It's just when we worked on this bill with the stakeholders we worked on, we didn't bring the issue up, and there would be other parties that I would have to obviously talk to, including the local government officials that would be required to do that work. So that's, we didn't do that. We kept the bill very narrow to the existing authority and kind of wanted us to do that. I'm happy to take that on if it's the committee's desire as part of this and have that discussion, or as a separate matter. But
Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Chair Fagan. Mr. Long, mm-hmm. why do you need a law to establish an interagency agreement? Do you need that? Or?
Chair Fagan, Representative Nierman, you don't for some things, but there are certain areas that make it more difficult to work through just a simple intergovernmental agreement, which is kind of the standard tool that agencies use to work together. And so to give you some examples that are kind of embedded within the bill, accounting provisions. One thing that Jim and I hope to do, we have two separate offices. 10, 15, 20% of the customers that show up at my office actually want to conduct his business, they're just in the wrong place, probably BCD, CCB, alphabet soup, maybe some confusion there. And so I would like to, if it was appropriate, to go ahead and serve that customer with our staff and take the, I'm making up the number because I don't know the amount that he charges, but the $100 for the license and hold that money for him. Well, current law requires us to transact that dollar within 24 hours. Well, it kind of cost me quite a bit to transact a $100 bill that's separate for somebody else on a daily basis. So this gives us the ability to do it on a quarterly basis. I have to account for it, keep it absolutely separate, maintain it, be transparent. If he did the same for me, he'd have to do the same. But it's just kind of saves some of those things that are kind of embedded into the state statute that you can't deal with through an intergovernmental agreement. That's just one example. I could go on if you'd like. But it's those kinds of transactions that this is going to help us be more efficient on our back end as well as for then the customer, because I don't think it's useful to have that customer that shows up at my office and say, no, you got to drive across town to Jim's, when we could probably work that out together.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay, well, thank you guys very much. I really appreciate it, and we'll discuss maybe if you want to keep this bill as it is or work on it to address some of Representative Holvey's considerations. Okay, with that, is there anyone else who would like to be heard on House Bill 2843? Okay, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2843, and we already did the work session on 2884, right? So is there anything else for the good of the order? All right, with that, I will close the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Effectiveness. I guess we're